Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And welcome to Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
So,
are we making relevant today, Aman?
Today, we are going to make relevant the highly irrelevant Matrix Resurrections. I was about to say Revolutions. I was like, no, that's not the right one.
I keep mixing up all the Matrix. It's Reloaded, Revolution, Resurrection. Like, I can't keep up.
Too many R's.
There's way too many R's. Why was R the letter to stick with? I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, yes, yeah. We're talking about Matrix Resurrections. That is the newest one, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what'd you think?
I loved the first half of it, especially all of the meta references to Warner Brothers being
that
like,
awesome.
Oh, I mean, it was so great. It was like, all right, we're going to do this with or without you. And it's like, okay, I wonder if Lana Wachowski got that written into the contract that I can make fun of you however much I want to.
Probably. I don't know if she had to have it getting written into the contract, but
probably. I mean, she got away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure some producers were like, okay, fine, this is funny, just keep it. So to be fair, I'm totally going to sound like a really bad geek, but I did not watch the second and third Matrix movies. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I was going to, but everyone keeps telling me how like it's a waste of your time and they were not good and blah, blah, blah. They had some good moments, but not really. So I watched recaps of the movies before I watched this, because obviously I had no idea what was happening or who was who or what. So, I mean, obviously I knew who Neo is and Trinity and all that, but like,
I'm glad you knew that much at least.
But like the extra characters, I guess, who were introduced in the site, like Jada Pinkett Smith's character.
Oh yeah. Niobe. Like,
Niobe. Yeah. And anyway, so I didn't know who that was in. So that was good context to have beforehand. It was still a little bit confusing, but overall I thought it was really interesting how they made him a video game designer developer dude. And the whole thing was just so meta, because he obviously just designed this like game called The Matrix, because he clearly in some subconscious way still remembers The Matrix,
right? And but more than that, they used it, I thought it was interesting how the computers, or in this case the analysts, used Neo's subconscious memories to create a false reality for him to keep him in check. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that it really kind of gets to is the crux of the most real worldy part of this movie, where Neil Patrick Harris's character, the analyst, and also, by the way, I loved him in that role. I thought he was fantastic, where he talked about how his predecessor, the architect, basically got it wrong by trying to make the Matrix all about math and facts and creating this sort of perfect reality to keep human beings in check. But really what was needed, according to the analyst, is to just give people what they want. And that is to give them confirmations of their own prejudices, basically their own prejudices and biases.
Yeah.
I think that really kind of gets to the crux of what we are dealing with today in America as a society, with the amount of polarization that we have, with all the studies that have been out there showing how people are of different parts of the political spectrum are interacting across those lines less and less so.
Yeah. I think it's also by giving people what they want is a very manipulative and subtle way of also keeping people in control in a way, right? Because I think this is how lots of different governments do this to their people too. I think the first example I'm thinking of is China, just because there are a lot of freedoms that they do give their citizens. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of ways that they keep use that to keep their population under control too. And like, I don't know. I can't think of specific examples. I don't know enough about China's geopolitical whatever, but you know, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's people outside of China who are screaming about like human rights issues and stuff. But then mm-hmm. there's a lot of people within China who just really avidly support the government too, no yeah. matter what. And you know, you find that situation in the US too. It's probably in most countries. So yeah, I just thought that was an interesting line when the analyst said that, of just giving people what they want.
Yeah. And I think though it's even more subtle than that. So for example, you'll see plenty of articles out there talking about how people vote against their own interests. Mm-hmm. So for example, one thing that comes to mind is the people who work in the coal mining industry. You know, yeah. In 2016, Hillary Clinton's speech about ending coal and ending the mining of coal and moving mm-hmm. on to clean renewable energies, it was not very well taken.
Yeah,
because in that speech, the way she phrased it, it fed into the narrative that, oh, these liberals mm-hmm. are just trying to take away your jobs.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that coal is getting harder and harder to mine. It has horrible health impacts for mm-hmm. the people who work in that industry. Yeah. And it doesn't pay that well.
Yeah.
It is in the best interest, if you really think about it, of, you know, the voters in West Virginia, for example, it is in their interests for their economy to transition to renewable energies,
yeah.
Which tends to be higher paying, mm-hmm. And
safer also, in terms of health. Yeah.
Safer and more long lasting, you know, mm-hmm. We're not about to run out of sunshine anytime soon.
Yeah.
And for the most part, the wind keeps a blowing.
Yeah.
You know, we're not about to hollow out. Like when you hollow out a mountain of all the coal that it has, that's the end. The end. So long term, it is in their best interest. But the thing is that over time, people have developed a certain narrative about what XYZ actually wants. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear about war in the Middle East and it's like, yeah, okay, wars happen in the Middle East. All right. And people then don't really maybe understand how something might be new. And this was happening also during the 2016 campaign. Atrocities happening in Yemen. And it's like, oh, well, that's the Middle East. That shit just happens.
Yeah.
All right. And instead, the most read articles in 2015, 2016 were articles on the Trump campaign mm-hmm. and on Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, because that was something new and it didn't. And you know, like people really want to hear stories about things that confirm their biases. Mm-hmm. And going back to the movie, that is exactly what the analyst was playing on to mm-hmm. keep the human mind in check, is to give people what they want and not so much worry about the facts.
Yeah. Yes. Always a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I did think also it was interesting how they did this time jump 60 years into the future in the quote unquote real world. Mm-hmm. But obviously a lot happened, but I thought it was interesting that they didn't explain any of it.
How did they explain again, Neo and Trinity not actually aging 60 years?
Oh, the machines brought them back to life. With their resurrection machines, they rebuild.
No, but I mean, in their alternate reality world, uh-huh. you know, Trinity is married to Chad and she's now Tiffany and like, you know, you know, some game developer dude. Why didn't they look old there? Oh wait, no, sorry. They actually look different, right? Than what they actually look like. Right, right. I forgot.
Yeah, they look different because
they did actually look old.
They did actually look old because the analyst gave them a different whatchamacallit profile page. I don't other people see them as old and ugly.
Yeah, yeah, and he's not, because they kept showing, they were showing that in reflections, right? That both Tiffany and Neo, or what was Neo's name in the, as
Mr. Anderson.
Oh yes, Mr. Anderson. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Which, speaking of which, now that I've said, why the hell was Agent Smith even there at all?
I know. If you can't bring back Hugo Weaving, why not?
Why bother?
Why bother? Really? Doesn't he die too? Like, you didn't have to bring him back. I don't know.
That was the whole thing.
Yeah. Even the Morpheus story made more sense to me than the Agent Smith dude. I read that Hugo Weaving actually was planning on being in it, but I guess things got delayed because of the pandemic or whatever, and then it didn't fit his schedule and he had to
back out of it.
So he was down to be in it again.
Maybe they already wrote it and couldn't figure out how to write him out in time.
I don't know.
Seems like it would have been pretty easy to do because he did not have much of a role.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so what else did you want to talk about this movie?
I did think that there was this whole interesting aspect about a civil war amongst the machines that they never really explained. I can see the whole thing about AI becoming so advanced that they actually develop free will to then make choices and, you know, join the free humans, so to speak. But they didn't really explain how that happened. And I think that that's a huge treasure box of stories that they could delve into. And I hope they do with media, whether it's, you know, like what they did with the Animatrix and whatnot, like telling other stories through like TV shows or anime or whatever the case may be. Yeah. I think there's a lot there that they could get into, but there was a lot in this movie that they just wanted the audience to accept at face value.
Yeah, you kind of had to, like, you had to just kind of be like, okay, I guess we're going along with this.
And I guess we're going along with this.
Yeah, like just to kind of keep going with the movie and keep up with whatever they were trying to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did think it was interesting how, I like that part where they're having to work together with the machines to overcome the bad machines. And yeah, so wait, I have a dumb question because I still don't really, because I didn't even watch the second and third Matrix movies, sorry. But so the architect and the analyst, are they machines or humans?
Machines.
Okay, right, that makes more sense. I just it's hard to tell, right? They made everyone look human, so it's just like, well, I get why you're looking human, but it's also very confusing as to like who you can trust. And I guess that's another
That's the point.
Yeah. So, yeah.
The second half of the movie.
Yeah.
Pretty garbage. Like, they set up all of these awesome, like, philosophical questions in the first half of the movie, literally going so far as to make the audience, at least for me, it made me even question, was the Matrix even real?
Yeah. You know,
like everything we saw in the first three movies, was that even like real in this universe? Mm-hmm. It literally went so far as to make me question that, because at the end of, I think, the second movie, Neo had this thing happen in the real world. Maybe it was in the third movie. I think it was at the end of the second movie where he stopped the Sentinel machines, like the big, like spidery looking things. Actually stop them dead in the real world.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which made me in that moment go, wait, are they just in another layer of the Matrix? All right. Oh, but man, then they never touched on it. They never touched on it again.
Wasn't that just more reinforcement that he is the one, like whatever that's supposed to mean?
You know, I thought so, but the whole concept of the one is somebody who has the mental ability to actually break all of the rules and the laws of physics within the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
So they really, they needed to expand on that, I thought, in the movies, and they just didn't.
They just didn't. Yeah. There was a lot they could do with just that. Like, because they made him this like messiah figure, right?
Yes.
Neo. And obviously there's the parallel there. But then it's like, what was the point? Like, I don't know. And then basically by the end of this one, is Trinity also the one?
See, another aspect that they didn't really explain.
She can fly now too? Like,
yeah. I think they made an attempt to explain it in a way to make it so that Trinity would have all the superpowers.
Uh-huh.
But I thought the explanation fell short a little.
Yeah. You know?
It didn't really stick with the continuity of the movies, of the first three movies, mm-hmm. I think. And there was a lot there that they could have explored, should have explored, and didn't explore, and instead tried to replicate the action magic of the mm-hmm. first Matrix movie, but poorly.
Yeah, the thing is, like, when the Matrix first came out, which when was that, 99, something like, sometime in the 90s, the first movie came out.
A time long, long ago, when the coolest technology that we had was a cell phone that didn't just flip open, it slided open.
I don't think it even did that back then in the 90s.
It did in the Matrix.
Oh, right. Sorry. I thought you were talking about the real world. Okay. Yeah. So I think back then the Matrix was literally like mind blowing with all their like effects that they were doing, the fighting, choreography, mm-hmm. all of that. It was awesome. Right.
Yeah.
And now the rest of the film industry has caught up and maybe surpassed the Matrix. So it did not seem as impressive, the action sequences.
Yeah. It really didn't. I think that the most impressive action sequences now mm-hmm. are the ones that require less and less CGI.
Yeah.
You know, I think I keep trying to think of the most impressive action sequences I've seen recently.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones that comes to the top of my mind, to the top of the list in my mind, is the hallway fight scene
Daredevil.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the whole thing that made that really cool was that it was a one-shot
mm-hmm.
action sequence.
Yeah.
It was a one-shot action sequence that didn't have any CGI.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that you can do so much now with visual effects, you know, using a computer. Literally, mm-hmm. they're able to de-age people, you know, like Marvel's been able to do this where they de-age people where you can't even tell that it's CGI. But when things can go that far and you can make a whole movie, you know, that's completely animated and you can't even tell that it's animated. I'm thinking of that one episode in Love, Death, and Robots where I'm with Michael B. Jordan. I was looking at it. I was like, is this CGI or is that actually Michael B. Jordan? Like, I spent the whole 15 minutes of that pondering that question. Like, when CGI has gotten back, what is now more impressive is that which is more difficult to pull off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is real world actual fight choreography that requires the actors to and stunt coordinators to actually practice.
This is gonna seem really weird and random, but I watched the Harry Potter reunion special thing that they had.
That is so random. I was not expecting that.
I know, but it reminded me of CGI. So, you know, in the very first Harry Potter movie, they basically in this reunion, they brought the cast back together, and in the interviews, they talked about all the movies that they did. And so starting off with the first one, like, they also brought the directors back to talk about each of the movies. And in the very first movie, you know, the first time Harry and the kids walk through the Great Hall, you see candles floating in the air. And mm-hmm. I remember that's how they described it in the books too. This whole time I thought that was CGI. Those were real fucking candles that they used. And they were talking about, like, Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, Rupert Grint. They were all talking about how while they were sitting there, like, the wax from those candles was dripping on them, like on all the students sitting there and stuff. And they had, you know, like, they use like fish wiring or whatever to, like,
right,
clean the candles in the air. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And this obviously makes sense because the first movie came out like 2001 or something, right? Just a few years after The Matrix. And there was not that much CGI available, or, you know, the budget or whatever it is.
Not very good CGI available.
Not very good CGI at that time. Yeah. So I think the best CGI happening at that time was happening in Lord of the Rings, probably. So,
and even then,
it was a lot of not CGI. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the most CGI heavy movie at that time was The Phantom Menace, Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Episode
one. They literally built sets to like waist height and filled in the rest with CGI.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Right.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. And that movie got slammed quite hard when it came out.
Yeah. I mean, that whole trilogy, I feel like did. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So, yeah. Going back to Matrix Resurrections.
I have a question. Priyanka Chopra's character. What?
There was a side bit thing in the second movie.
I know there was a little brown girl. She is the older version of that brown girl. Awesome. Yes. Great. What was the point of her again?
She helped Neo and friends break into Machine City.
Yeah. What did she do when she was a little girl?
She was a natural born program that was made when two programs fall in love.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Okay.
Are we about to, do I need to have the birds and the bees conversation with you, Lena? The software edition.
This is so weird. Okay. I didn't realize that was her beginning. Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I think I'm fresh out of things to say about Matrix Resurrections. It was, the first half was fascinating. And like you said, posed a lot of cool philosophical questions. And then the second half, they did not sadly go into the cool philosophical questions that much.
I mean, I thought this was a great opportunity to turn the Matrix into a layer, which is, you know, taking the whole concept of and starting off with the whole question of what is real, you know, and turning it into, well, you have the Matrix. And then when you go out into the real world, that is just another layer of the Matrix, followed by another layer. Like, they could have gone that route. And I think that that would have been a really awesome mind fuck.
But that would have been so depressing too.
I'm okay with that.
Just know you're like stuck in the Matrix forever.
Yeah. Yes. Have you, I know I've talked about this before in the show, but the whole concept of pixelization, where in the real world, you know, when we've got microscopes, you know, you zoom in, you can look at an atom, you can look at something at the atomic scale. We can zoom in further and look at the components that make up an atom, electrons, neutrons, protons, and we can continue to zoom in further and see quarks, which are the things that make up electrons and protons and neutrons.
Right.
But if you keep going further and further, eventually everything looks like a square pixel.
Weird. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which for some people says that
means that we're in the Matrix.
We all actually live in a virtual reality and are just being run by a highly advanced computer. And when you zoom in far enough, the computer just loses capacity to continue rendering things further beyond that point.
Right. Barf. I feel sick. I have heard of that. And
yes,
it's unsettling every time I hear about it. Okay, well, so now I guess I do have more things to say about the Matrix, but I don't remember if I told you this like outside of us recording or whenever. Did I tell you how I saw a clip of an interview Keanu Reeves was doing where he was telling the interviewer about how he recently met some teenager or someone who had never seen the Matrix and didn't know what it was about? So he was trying to explain the premise of the movie and what it was about, and he was like, yeah, and so the Matrix is like this other world that's not real, and you know, and we're all in it and blah blah blah, and it's all about coming out of whatever. So and he's like, I play this character Neo who's trying to like break out of the Matrix, and this teenager that he was speaking with just said, who cares if it's not real? And I just was like, like this is another big generation break, I feel like, you know, where I feel like that is such a Gen Z response to be like, yeah, well, who cares if it's real or not? Like, who cares if it's true or not? If, as long as I'm getting the things that I want and that I'm comfortable and things are convenient for me, who cares, right? As long as I'm not personally in like sad or suffering, I think that's what I don't know. And it's,
I actually interpret that differently. That's
how I interpreted it.
This is the first time I've heard it. I've heard this, you telling me this right now, but my reaction internally was like, oh wow, that is super deep, because who cares if it's quote unquote real or not? What's real for all intents and purposes is what we're experiencing. You know?
Yes. So that's another, I think also, by the way, that's how Keanu Reeves interpreted it. And it's funny because I think the interviewer interpreted it like how I did, because after Keanu finished telling that story, the interviewer was like, that's wild. And Keanu was like, isn't that awesome? And like, it was just this like, I don't know. It was just a little, I didn't even watch the whole interview. It just was a clip that someone had posted of it.
And yeah.
I was like, what? Okay.
So I mean, I was just thinking of something that I have said to friends over the course of my life, you know, who are going through a tough time or whatever, you know, and also trying to remind myself, no matter how bad you've got it in life, there's always somebody else out there who's got it worse. All right. But that doesn't mean that whatever you are going through is negated. You still got to deal with that shit. All right. So yeah. Who cares if the Matrix is real or not? That's the shit that we're dealing with. And that's the shit that we got to deal with, because that's the shit in front of us.
Yeah. But also, don't you want to know if you're a prisoner? In some way, not a prisoner, I don't know, like you're just, it's kind of like, okay, crap, I don't remember if this was Plato or Aristotle, but I'm totally gonna butcher this because I don't even remember the whole thing about it, but I don't even know if I can explain.
Are something you talking about
the
about,
shadows in the caves and stuff?
That is Plato.
Plato, yes.
That we are all actually just figures in, and this is, it's a thought exercise. He didn't mean this literally.
Right.
But the entire idea is that, and I'm forgetting the actual, it's the cave exercise.
Yeah.
You know, that we are all people who are in a cave. Facing a wall, with a fire behind us,
right? And all we see are our shadows.
All we see is the shadows,
right?
All right, and that is how we interpret everything that's happening around us. But in fact, there is a deeper truth that exists that most of us, and maybe even all of us, cannot actually deal with, because it would require us turning around and looking directly into the flame. But this sort of true reality that he's talking about is also something that we all innately have a concept of, all right, that we know exists. That's why you can draw the picture of an ideal horse, all right? And no matter what the horse is that you're looking at, there is no real world horse that looks like the drawing of the ideal horse, all right?
Okay.
However, we still recognize it as such because somewhere there is that ideal horse that exists that we are all somehow subconsciously aware of.
Okay. So what's your point?
What he's trying to say is that the world that we live
in. Who's he now? Are you still talking about Plato? Okay.
I'm still talking about Plato.
Okay.
The world that we exist in, we only take in through our senses, all right? But those senses are limited in what they take in.
Yeah.
And in fact, the real truth is something much bigger than that. But it is a truth that we are still sort of aware of.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like the Matrix.
Wait, but what's your broader point you're trying to say with
the broader point that I'm trying to say about this is, so this is the world that we live in. Sure, if there's another layer behind that that we are unable to process, so what? Because we still have to deal with the world that we are able
to process. Yeah,
that exists before us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I guess that is one way to make peace with it.
So if we all lived in the Matrix, all right, that's a little bit like saying, let's say you knew that you live in the Matrix, right? That's a little bit, that it then becomes a very easy excuse to say, who cares if there are children dying of starvation somewhere in the world? Yeah, it's a fake reality anyways.
Yeah.
But you know what? The suffering is real and it still needs to be tackled.
Yeah. All right.
The joys that we experience, they're joys because we are experiencing them. Who cares whether that experience is happening in a virtual reality like the Matrix or happening in quote unquote the real world? Mm-hmm. It is what we are experiencing.
Interesting. Okay. That's, I think, a lovely idealistic way to approach the world and to live in the moment. And all that. I just am not sure like most of society thinks that way. I still, I know my interpretation of that teenager's response is like more pessimistic and all that, but I really do think most people are just like complacent, you know, and that's why they're like, who cares? They're saying who cares from a place of complacency.
Yeah, but I think that
maybe I'm jaded.
All these folks in Gen Z are a lot smarter than
I'm not saying credit for. I'm not even saying this is all about Gen Z. So I didn't mean to make it like all of Gen Z is complacent. I'm not saying that, everyone. I'm not saying that. Okay. That's wrong. That's literally what every other generation did to us millennials. And it's very annoying. So I'm not saying that. I'm just saying as a society as a whole, we are very complacent. And
Yes.
And a lot of the Matrix was kind of, I think, about that, the general premise of it, you know, about like human complacency and kind of just being another cog in the machine, kind of, you know.
I think you're right. That's what the red pill, blue pill metaphor comes down to. Mm-hmm. You know, are you just going to sit back and accept the world that is, or are you going to face the truths and confront it?
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah. Who knows what the world will actually look like, you know, even 2 years, 5 years from now, like whether we're going to still be, I don't know. I think every episode I'm just like, I have no idea what the world's going to look like in the future, which obviously no one expects me to know, but.
Right. It leaves me wondering
where we're going to be as a society.
You know, there was a quote that I read somewhere, and I cannot for the life of me remember who said it, but it was something along the lines of, people always overestimate how far we will get 10 years from now and underestimate how far we will get 5 years from now. You know,
that makes sense though. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In 2002, imagine just for a second what cell phones were like. You had a wired phone in your car, and that was freaking cool.
Yeah.
5 years later, 2007, the first iPhone was released.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of everything changing.
Yeah.
How we live our lives completely changing.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, in 2012, still no flying cars.
Right. Yeah. 2022, still no flying cars.
Still no, 10 years even further, still no flying cars.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Right. 2022, still have to pay for healthcare in America.
2022, yep. Yeah. Still no healthcare for everybody.
2022, racism is still alive and well.
2022, or as I like to call it, 2020 revolutions. COVID is still a thing.
Yeah. Fuck. Oh my God. Wow. You know what? On that lovely note,
did you catch my callback to Matrix?
I heard it. Revolutions. I heard it. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I was gonna say we actually didn't wish anyone Happy New Year yet on this episode. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Yeah. Anyway, so we clearly have kicked off the new year with a philosophical start. And this is actually going to be the last episode of our season two, as we're calling it.
Lena's doing air quotes because of the complete arbitrariness with which we are calling seasons on this show.
Season one was like those random five episodes we did back in 2016. And this chunk of episodes that we've done is season two. And so we're going to take a break. Just season for the rest two, of
when Grounded Geeks got its shit together.
Yes. Okay. I'm on. And so we're taking a break just for the rest of January this month, not for 5 years like we did last time when we said we were taking a break. And
promise we'll be back.
We promise, guys. And so we will be back the first Thursday of February, February 3rd. We'll be back February 3rd with a new episode. So stay tuned, but we just needed a break because don't we all need a break?
Yes.
Yeah. Everything is on fire. Either figuratively or literally.
Both. Both. Both apply.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On
that happy note, as always, thanks for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And catch us in a month.
Bye.
Bye.